This is Cruise Radio.
Now more than ever, you should consider trip insurance for any kind of trip you take, not just cruises. Get a free quote at tripinsurance.com.
Broadcasting from the tripinsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida, this is Cruise Radio.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Doug Parker. Thank you so much for checking out this episode of Cruise Radio, a review of MSC Lyrica today, a cruise that was over in the Mediterranean out of Athens round trip. Jen will be here in just a bit to talk about her family vacation over there. Staff writer Richard Sims is here with Cruise News. I'd like to invite you to get caught up on all the cruise news 5 days a week at Cruise Radio News. You can find that just opposite of this channel on the podcast feed or at the Cruise Radio YouTube channel. Staff writer Richard Sims on deck. Hey, Richard.
Hey, Doug.
So since we spoke last week, a couple of lines have made some policy changes regarding testing.
Yeah, this is actually a little bit difficult to report because things are changing so quickly that 10 minutes after we finish recording, things could completely change. But here's the basic lay of the land. Carnival, Celebrity, Royal, and MSC all essentially said the same thing, which was that on cruises of 5 nights or less, pre-cruise testing would no longer be required. Except, of course, it can't possibly be that simple because right after that, like a day later, Carnival amended their statement to say that it would still be required on sailings to Bermuda or the Bahamas or Grand Cayman or Canada, no matter whether you were going on a 4-night or a 10-night sailing. I assume we're going to see similar policy adjustments being made in the days and weeks to come by the other lines because, you know, it's not up to the cruise lines alone to make these decisions. Yes, they can make the decision that, you know, we're not going to require testing, but if they are going to a port that requires testing, then they have to change their policy, and that's what we've been seeing. So, you know, kind of the best thing you can do right now is to not only check the pre-testing and vaccine requirements on any cruise you book, but keep checking. Stay on top of it because there's a lot of confusing information out there. There is occasionally conflicting information out there. And you really want to make sure that whatever you do, you don't show up to the port and find out that, you know, they've changed the policy and you can't get on board. Frankly, the safest thing you can do right now is if there is any doubt in your mind, just go ahead and take a test, you know, have the test ready so that when you get to the port, if they're like, oh, yeah, we need testing. Oh, well, here you go. I did one yesterday. You know, that's sort of the way that I'm operating right now is, you know, I've got several cruises booked coming up and I'm just basically planning to test no matter what so that I'm covered.
Another good reason to have a travel agent as well.
Oh, 100%, you know, because your travel agent should be completely on top of that and know exactly what the policy is and alert you if, you know, and be a little bit careful that you don't just sort of go along with what other people say. I happen to be in a Facebook group for one of my upcoming cruises, and someone in the Facebook group was posting, you know, hey, good news. Carnival says we no longer need to do testing because it's a 5-day or less sailing. And, you know, while that's true, what she was posting was actually inaccurate for our sailing because we're going to Bermuda and we do have to test. So don't just go by, you know, what you read on Facebook. Make sure that you're staying on top of what the actual policies are.
I hope that's not Christy posting that in there.
It is not.
Okay, good. Norwegian Cruise Line is changing up some menus and they had another milestone for a new build.
I will be interested to see how people react to this one, Doug, because Norwegian Cruise Line has announced that when Prima rolls out in a couple of months, the two main dining rooms on board will have fixed menus. That means they won't be changing things up every night, but instead will have the same basic things every night of your cruise. Now, Norwegian promises it's going to be a varied and expanded menu, and it'll include a bunch of stuff like, you know, and some higher end stuff. And there'll also be a mix and match pasta section where you can basically create like 24 different dishes by combining different things. But clearly the thinking here is that most cruisers eat at least a couple of nights in specialty restaurants. Now, I 100% guarantee you that the members of the Nickel and Dime posse are going to say this is NCL's way of making sure people spend money in specialty restaurants so that they don't get bored, you know, going to the main dining room every night and seeing the same thing on the menu. NCL also said that on Prima, the buffet is going to be a little bit smaller than on other ships. Again, they say here that the reason for this is that most of the venues on board, or at least a lot of the venues on board, are going to be serving lunch and dinner, which puts, you know, less pressure to have this big kind of one size fits all buffet. They will be rolling the new menus out across the fleet sometime in 2023. There's no word yet on whether or not they might downsize buffets on existing ships, but I tend to doubt it, because unless a ship is going in for a dry dock during which, you know, they're making big changes, it would be tough to just sort of, you know, cut down the size of the buffet, put something else there. But they do have a bunch of new ships coming out and on order, so I assume we'll probably see these changes on those. And lastly, speaking of these new ships, so Prima hasn't even debuted yet. It's coming out soon, but already Viva, the next ship in this new class, is on its way. It's been floated out at Fincantieri, and, you know, that's one of the big steps toward becoming completed. If you want more information on Prima, keep your eye on the site, because we're going to be doing a lot of reporting on it, and we will actually be, you know, reporting on, from on board it in October.
The Spanish food they're serving, did that say paella?
Paella.
Okay.
I am a big fan of paella. So I will definitely be trying that during my sailing.
See, y'all put that on my script for the news briefs, and I just took it out and put Spanish food because I had no clue how to say it. So,
well, see, here you go. Now you can, next time you do it, you can say paella.
I keep saying you'll have to spell these things out phonetically, or I'll totally butcher them, or I just won't say them at all.
But you know what? People love that about you.
Yeah, I guess. I'm the king butcher. So over 3 million guests served.
Yeah. So this is Carnival. They've hit another milestone. They've welcomed 3 million passengers on board since the restart, which was about 400 days ago. That's over 1,104 sailings. What's interesting here is that they hit the 2 million mark for guests in May. So that number went from 2 million to 3 million in less than 75 days. It's, when you think about it, there are 95,000 guests per week on the Carnival fleet. That's just Carnival. So there's almost 100,000 people per week sailing at any given time on Carnival ships, which is kind of amazing. They obviously, when they first started, the reason that it took so much less time to get to the 3 million mark than it did the 2 million mark is that, the first, 6 months, 8 months, they were not necessarily sailing the entire fleet, and the fleet was not sailing at full capacity. But by this third quarter, they're expecting to have most of the ships sailing at 110% capacity. And what that means is, when people hear 110%, they're like, how can that be? There's, you know, only so much room. When you look at capacity, you look at it as double occupancy, but a lot of people obviously have more than two people in a room, and that's how you wind up getting above 100% capacity.
Glacier Bay National Park is tightening the reins on cruise ships.
You know, as much as we all love cruising, we all also kind of sort of have to say that, you know, obviously it has an impact on the environment. And cruise lines do everything in their power to negate that impact. But, you know, just like cars on the highway have an impact, or planes in the sky have an impact on the environment, so do cruise ships in any environment they go to. And there are some environments that they go to that are a little more delicate than others. And Glacier Bay is obviously a national treasure. You know, this is a beautiful, pristine place, and they want to keep it that way. So one of the things they've done is they've initiated an environmental inspection program that's focused on large cruise ships entering the park. Independent inspectors board the ship and sort of look at the operation to make sure there's no wastewater because there's one of the rules is no wastewater is allowed off the ship in that area. They look to see how they're doing on protecting the local wildlife, compliance with, you know, all the different regulations that they have to go to. This is a lot like the other inspection programs in that, even though it is being done by Glacier Bay National Park, and even though it is basically, you know, the cruise ships have to do this, the cruise ships pay for this. This is being paid for by the industry. The third-party inspectors report directly to the managers at Glacier Bay. So it isn't as if the cruise lines are paying for this and the cruise lines then get the report so that they can kind of, like, you know, fudge anything that they might not like. No, the cruise lines pay for it, but it's an independent third party that does the inspections and then gives the report to the folks at Glacier Bay. Ships' crews do not know when this inspection is going to happen. This is like, you know, they probably find out about 20 minutes before, which I assume sends off a mad scramble that would be great with the music from Benny Hill as people try and like make sure everything looks the way it needs to look. But this is important because it is, you know, yet another way that the cruise lines are working within, you know, kind of strict rules to try and help prevent any damage that they might be doing to the local environment in pristine places like this.
News of the weird, things that go bump in the night.
A few weeks ago, we reported that the Norwegian Sun hit an iceberg. Well, really a growler, the new term that we've been repeating and will now be part of our vocabulary forever. This time around, it was a fishing vessel that ran into the Norwegian Pearl. It happened around, you know, 2:30 in the morning off the coast of,
Nantucket.
Somewhere in Yes, I knew it was somewhere in New England. And what's more New England than Nantucket? Apparently, the jolt sort of, you know, definitely woke people up and it caused a little bit of damage on the ship as far as things falling over off tables and stuff like that, but nothing substantial. The fishing boat, however, the Gabby G, had a little bit more damage. It was, however, able to sail back to port under its own power. There was one minor injury on board, not on board the cruise ship, on board the fishing vessel. I'm pretty sure most of the people on the cruise ship probably didn't even notice, you know, it's like swatting away a fly. The Coast Guard's doing an investigation, so there's not a lot of information as to exactly how this happened. But if there's a bit of good news for Norwegian, it seems very unlikely that, you know, they are in any way, shape, or form responsible for this. And here's why. The collision happened. The fishing boat hit midship. So, you know, it'd be bad if the ship hit the fishing boat dead on, because that would sort of imply, oh dear, that might be Norwegian's fault. But it would be really hard for Norwegian to be at fault when the ship sort of slammed into it midship. You know, that's kind of difficult to imagine a scenario where somehow, you know, Norwegian was like doing whirlies out there and slammed into the ship. But we probably won't get any more information for a little while, but there is an investigation going on into how it happened.
Pure speculation at this point. It's hard to imagine, though, with a fishing vessel that size, that the nav team on either Pearl or the Gabby B didn't see each other on the radar. Interesting.
That's the really interesting question is, you know, both ships obviously have radar. And yes, it was early in the morning, and I think there were like some rainy and foggy conditions, but it's still, especially for the Gabby G, is where it seems really weird because, you know, Norwegian's radar would be focused out in front of them, and the ship came at them from the side. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of hard to imagine how the person looking at radar on Gabby G didn't say, hey, there's kind of a big object in front of us.
Yeah,
or maybe we should turn.
Yeah, or the nav team on NCL being like, oh my gosh, someone's approaching us. We don't know who this is.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what the Coast Guard says in their report.
Tim from Birmingham says, for our listener question, I have a medical issue where I cannot drink, but my wife does. Good for her. Is it possible for my wife to get the beverage package next summer on Allure of the Seas, but me not get it? I'm even happy to provide a doctor's note if they need it.
Okay, so that's Royal Caribbean. And first of all, Tim, I'm really sorry, and please may I never have a condition that requires me not to be able to drink. I would be very sad. But the good news is, yes, you can. While the rule is basically that anybody of drinking age in a stateroom, if one person gets it, they all have to get it. That is generally the rule. But there are exceptions made in cases like this. And what they do is they say that you need to buy the soda package instead. So everybody in the room has to have a package. But in that case, because there's, you know, as long as you can provide, you know, like you said, you've got a medical note, you can back this up, they will allow an exception that lets you get the soda package instead. Doug, that's with Royal Caribbean. I'm not sure. Do you know if the other lines basically do the same thing?
I can't speak on NCL, although they're like giving those, you know, beverage packages away like candy over there. But Carnival, it's always been a hard no. I'm actually traveling on a Carnival ship with someone who takes medication that cannot drink. So I'm going to try it because I always get the package. Not that I burn up all 15 drinks, but I love me some coffee and energy drinks too.
Things I really like about Carnival's package is that it does include those things. You know, Norwegian does not include those, although, you know, the premium package now you can get that includes Starbucks, and they have just the Starbucks package that for, what was it, $12.95 a day?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bargain for anybody who gets like two Starbucks a day.
Yeah, I know nothing about law or anything, but it seems like it could be possibly like possible discrimination if you're making someone buy something that they physically can't do just because the other person has it, you know?
We are not lawyers, but we play them on the radio.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense, right? Or am I speaking out of turn?
I completely agree. I mean,
yeah.
I would think there has to be some kind of provision in place. And like I said, there's probably, or like Tim said, really, there's probably got to be some rule that, you know, you need to be able to provide some form of proof of this condition. Obviously, the reason they do it is they don't want people like you buying the beverage package and me drinking all your drinks. You know, like, right, you say, you don't drink 15 drinks. So maybe you decide, oh, well, you have half, I'll have half, and we'll share the price. That's why they do it. They don't want people doing that. But if you have a medical condition and can prove it, it would seem that they've got to make an exception for that.
Yeah. So Tim, you're good for you and the wife on Allure next summer. Just contact your travel agent or the customer service at Royal. They'll ask you a couple of questions and you should be good to go. This was as of a couple of weeks ago, at least. Been talking with staff writer Richard Sims. As always, my friend, thank you so much.
Glad to be here.
Breaking news as it happens. Online and on demand.
A big question we get at Cruise Radio is, how do I know if I need trip insurance? Simple answer. If you're getting on a plane, taking a road trip, or getting on a cruise ship, you need to have travel insurance. Hey, it's Doug Parker from my friends at TripInsurance.com. Not only does TripInsurance.com protect your vacation investment, but it also gives you peace of mind in case anything were to go wrong on your trip. How do they do it? They offer three different types of trip insurance policies. Good, better, and best. One policy for every vacation budget. But it doesn't just stop there. They're up to 40% lower when you shop around on other comparison sites. Plus, TripInsurance.com offers 24-hour customer support before, during, and after your trip, online claims assistance, and travel alerts to let you know what's going on at your destination. But find out for yourself. Check out TripInsurance.com.
You're listening to Cruise Radio, the trusted voice of the cruise industry.
Jennifer and her family just returned from a 7-night cruise aboard MSC Lyrica. It was out of Athens and it hit the Greek Isles, Turkey, and Israel. And Jennifer joins us on the line. Hello there, Jennifer.
Hello.
The last time we spoke was before the shutdown, and I think you were on Norwegian Star, right?
Yes.
2019, crazy. Time has sure been flying. So this was a 7-night cruise out of Athens, which is really cool in itself. But before we get to the actual destination itself, let's take a couple of steps back here. What made you want to take this 7-night cruise on MSC out of Athens?
Well, to be honest, we really were interested in seeing the ports that they offered. We are fully vaccinated, so we knew once we got to Athens, we had to do a COVID test to get onto the ship. And then at embarkation, you had to do a COVID test that MSC provided and paid for. So we felt very confident about the policies put in place to keep everybody safe.
Cool. And you make your way over there from Florida to Athens. Any pre-cruise time?
We did. We spent, we got the cruise left on a Monday and we got to Athens on Saturday. So we did, you know, went up to the Acropolis on Saturday evening and did a bunch of walking. And Sunday we did a walking tour of the city and just really soaked in Athens. And then even Monday morning, we just kind of went out and enjoyed the city a little bit before we made our way to the port.
How packed is Athens right now with travel being back?
You know, it wasn't terrible. Like, we didn't have any trouble. Like the Monastraki Square, where everybody kind of hangs out, there was quite a few people there, but we didn't feel like it was overwhelming at all. The city itself is very interesting. There's a lot of graffiti, but it's very clean. We saw people cleaning the streets constantly. So, and we felt very safe there as well.
So you make your way to the cruise ship, the MSC Lyrica. How was embarkation for you?
Really smooth. Our given time was at 11 a.m. And I had called MSC and I said, you know, I don't want to embark that early. And they said, no problem. Just go anytime before they had said 6 p.m., which made me very nervous because, you know, being a, you know, any other ship leaves, that's really late. So we went about 2 o'clock-ish maybe, and super smooth process, no lines at all. Checked in, they did a quick COVID test, and we were probably on the ship within 10 minutes, if that, I mean, we didn't, there was no waiting at all. And our rooms were ready. We went right up to our rooms.
So what were your first impressions when you boarded MSC Lyrica?
It's an older ship. It's a little bit smaller, not a lot of fanfare at all. And I think the interesting thing with MSC cruises are, you know, you can embark and disembark in each spot. So, you know, there were people that were actually leaving the ship. There were people that was their port stop for the day. So, you know, we've been on Disney, and Disney makes a big fanfare about when you get on the ship. There wasn't any of that. It was just very like, okay, you're on the ship, no big deal. But I thought it was nice. It was clean. A lot of people busy working, just kind of doing heads down, doing what they needed to do.
I know it's one thing I do like about these European cruises. They operate that ferry schedule, so you can embark and disembark on any port you want to. So it really, like, you know, like if you're leaving out of Miami, that's your only embarkation port. So you have, you know, sometimes 3,000 people trying to embark in one day, whereas like a cruise like that operating a ferry schedule over in Europe, you might only have 500 people in some ports.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, it didn't feel overwhelming. And even the lifeboat drill, you know, normally if on a regular cruise line, a lifeboat drill, there's 3,000 people at the lifeboat drill. This was, you know, maybe 400, if that. So it seemed to be, you know, just very controlled. No, not a lot of influx of people all at the same time. So there wasn't that rushing, or it didn't feel crowded.
You mentioned your stateroom was ready when you got on board. So what kind of stateroom did you have? And what did you think of your experience in it throughout the week?
So we had actually booked 2 inside staterooms because our children, who are 20 and 16, were traveling with us. So we got a room for them and a room for us. And we had originally booked 2 inside staterooms. And about maybe a couple weeks before the cruise, I found out they were both upgraded to ocean view rooms. And so we're like, oh, great. And then we were offered to put in for a balcony upgrade. And I put in the very lowest amount possible, like lowest. I think it was like $100 a person for me and my husband. And maybe 3 days before the cruise, I found out we were upgraded to a balcony. So I found our room was very comfortable. The balcony was great. I was a little bit concerned about people smoking on the balcony just because Europeans are a little more notorious for smoking. I think only one time I smelled smoke out on the balcony that somebody else was smoking, but our room was very comfortable, very, I think, industry standard for a room. Same thing with our boys. They had an inside the ocean view room, nice big window with a huge ledge, you know, that worked great for them for extra storage. Yeah, we felt the rooms were very comfortable. You know, the typical cruise line bathrooms are small, but, you know, totally adequate.
With it being a European ship and based in Europe year round, were there only European plugs on board?
Yeah, so only the, I believe it's a 220. So we brought our converters and we didn't have any issues.
Very good. So let's talk about dining on board MSC Lyrica. We'll start at the top at the buffet, the whatever MSC calls it. I'll call it the Lido Deck Buffet. How was the experience there and what kind of service is MSC doing up there?
It was very, very multicultural for sure. So there's a lot of different varieties of foods. There's no COVID precautions. Like, you know, they would, of course, ask you to sanitize your hands and whatnot. And all the workers wore the N95 masks. And they had asked that people on the ship would wear the mask in the public spaces. Like when we went to the shows, we wore a mask, but in the buffets, it certainly wasn't required. And it was all serve yourself, just like a regular buffet. And the food was okay. To be honest, it would be, you know, not our normal fare that we would enjoy. So we spent a lot of time at the pizza place or the grill with the hamburgers and the hot dogs. And like they would have like fish sticks and chicken, you know, grilled chicken and that kind of stuff. It was overall good.
Let's talk about the main dining room experience then. What time dining did you have and how was that?
We had the early dining, which is a little unusual for us. We went to 6:30 dining and it was good. We're not big foodies, but the food was totally fine. The service was great. Being from North America, water and coffee is included, bottled water. So we had bottled water every night for dinner. And Yeah, it was good. It was really on par with Royal Caribbean or Norwegian that we've experienced.
Now, this is an older ship. I think it was like launched at like 02 or 03, I think. I could be totally wrong there, but I don't think it has a lot of specialty venues on it. So did you eat anywhere else outside of the buffet or the main dining room or the poolside like hamburger and hot dog place?
No, and it doesn't have any specialty dining.
Okay, gotcha. Very nice. Well, let's talk about the entertainment then. How was the entertainment on MSC? Because with it being an Italian cruise line, sometimes people can get hung up with that because, you know, you can't do comedy, a comedy show in seven different languages at one time.
Right. Yeah, we went to the show every night just for, you know, just to support the people, the performers. Some shows were hits and some were misses, but yeah, it was overall entertaining. It would be, you know, I think, you know, one night they had a salute to like Broadway or something like that. And they would be singing and dancing and doing their thing. They had one night, there was three singers from England was the actor. I mean, it was fine. It was entertaining. And in the theater, you would wear your mask. They would have somebody stationed outside the door so that everybody was wearing a mask in the theater. But other than that, yeah, we would go and it was, you know, maybe an hour, if that. But yeah, it certainly wasn't, you know, a Broadway production, and it's a pretty small stage that they had, but we went and supported them and it was fine. It was entertaining.
And how about the music in the venues around the ship outside of the theater?
Yeah, there would be piano acts. We didn't go and sit in any of the bars or anything and listen to them, but I did hear them playing and people seemed to be enjoying them.
All right, well, let's talk about the sea days on board this 7-night cruise. Now, normally these European cruises don't have a lot of sea days, normally one or two. How many did yours have?
Just one.
Just one. And how was it as far as crowds and congestion?
It was good, actually. Yeah, we didn't have any trouble. I found the pool to be a little too cold for my liking. I don't know, maybe spoiled being in Florida. But so I put my feet in the water and I was like, oh, that's too cold. So the pools themselves weren't very crowded, I think, because the water was cold. Mm-hmm. But we found a place to kind of relax. And they always had something kind of going on the pool deck, like music or dance lessons, and those dance lessons would be packed. There would not be an open spot. So, and a bunch of little activities going on. So I didn't feel like we were over, like, you know, we felt very claustrophobic or anything like that. No, I felt like everybody had plenty of space.
All right, well, let's talk about the ports of call on this 7-night cruise. You did some of the Greek Isles, Turkey, and Israel. So let's just go in order here. What was your first port of call and what'd you do?
Our first stop was Kushadasi in Turkey. And we rented a car and drove to it's an ancient city called Ephesus. And it was the second largest city in the Roman Empire. So we just kind of did kind of a self-guided tour through there. And then we drove back to the city and turned in the rental car and actually just kind of walked around the city a little bit. There's a big statue that overlooks the port. So we walked up there and then there's a sign that says Kushadasi. So my boys wanted a picture by that. So we just kind of walked around in the city a little bit before we got back on the ship.
Okay. And then what'd you do next?
The next one was our day at sea. And then after that was our stop in Israel. And that was at Haifa, which is pretty far north in the country. Mm-hmm. And so there we ended up almost renting a taxi for the whole day from, cause our tour had kind of fallen through. So we rented a taxi and that taxi driver took us, to Nazareth and we made a stop by the Sea of Galilee, went to the Jordan River and then went to the Dead Sea and then, went back to Haifa and kind of went up to this overlooking spot overlooking the city. And that was really nice. That was actually our longest port day. But yeah, I would love to go back and see more of Israel for sure.
When you got that taxi, the taxi rental, I've done these before in some cities and you could pay anything from like 500 to 1,000 euros to have a taxi driver for the day. Was yours pricey?
It was. It ended up being $700 for the four of us. Mm-hmm. But he normally would charge $850 for his whole van. But he was saying they're kind of struggling with tourists right now. And you know, not a lot of people take tours, unlike, you know, on a Caribbean cruise where a lot of people go and tour the area. it's just kind of a different feel there. It's not as, you know, and a lot of people, I think, do the tours through the cruise line. Right. We tend not to do the tours through the cruise line. We tend to do them on our own. But, gotcha. But so, yeah, it was, it ended up being $700 US.
Gotcha. And then where'd you go after Israel?
So then in Israel, we had a stop in Cyprus. And there also we rented a car. We had the car company come and meet us at the port and drop off the car. And there we went, part of Cyprus has a big cat sanctuary. And so we went and visited this cat sanctuary where there's hundreds of cats. So we went and kind of hung out with these cats for a while and just kind of drove around the island a little bit. Went and saw, like, there's supposedly a rock that's the birthplace of Aphrodite. So we stopped and kind of hung out there for a little bit, just enjoyed the view and the water. And then kind of headed back to the port. The only it seemed like these port days were rather short. Like you had to be back on the ship by like 3:30. So it went fast.
Very curious. Is it intimidating renting a vehicle like a car in another country?
Actually, we do it all the time because it's just cheaper for the four of us, you know, to rent a car. So it's always just been more economical. And my husband has no fear. So he's like, yeah. And, you know, he doesn't, it got a little hairy in Turkey, to be honest, because he ended up taking a wrong turn and it was a stick shift and he couldn't get it. And so he ended up having to back down this really tight alleyway. So I was hyperventilating, but he was fine. No, and actually we've never run into issues. Our credit card includes a lot of good car insurance coverage as long as you book the car on that card.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, yeah, we've never had any issues. Knock on wood.
Where did you head after Cyprus?
Then we went to Rhodes in there, rented a car, and that was really nice because it was right off the ship, like a 30-second walk from the ship to the car rental. Picked up the car rental, drove down to Lindos, I believe it is, and there's an Acropolis there. So we were able to get down there, park, go walk up to the Acropolis, check it all out, and then on our way walking back down from the Acropolis, I mean, the line was like an hour long and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, because now by the time all the cruise ships, you know, excursions were there and we're like, so glad we're getting out of here. Then we just kind of drove around the island for a little bit. The one spot has a diving platform out in the ocean or out in the sea. And so my son went and dove off of that. And so that was a nice little place. And they also have a fortress right there in the middle of right where the ship docks. So we walked around that for a little bit, but it was very touristy and lots of shops and lots of the same shops over and over. That was okay. So then after Rhodes, we went to Santorini, and we had been to Santorini previously on a cruise. So we kind of knew what we wanted to do, something a little different. So we rented a car again. And that time we drove to, it's called Akrotiri. It's a village that dates back to the Bronze Age that was there when the volcanic eruption happened. And so they've found the, you know, remains of the city. So we checked that out and went to, there's a red rock kind of beach down there with that's all volcanic rock. So we went and looked at that, you know, checked that out. The boys went swimming for a little bit, drove back to, went to Ia, just did the little tourist stuff, you know, saw the windmills again. And then we did walk out to, we turned in the rental car and then walked out to, Skouros Rock. There's a big rock kind of in the middle of the cauldron kind of. And so we walked out there and just checked out the view from there. And we got on, that was the last tender to the ship was at 5 o'clock and we were on that 5 o'clock tender. So nice. We definitely used every minute we had there.
So it comes time to debark this ship. How was the process there? Like, was there a lot of you getting off in Athens?
You know, to be honest, I don't know because it didn't even feel crowded. We were on deck 9, so our disembark time would have been like 8:30. Our boys were on deck 7, so their disembark time was 9:30. So they just wanted everybody out of their room by 8 o'clock. So at 8, we left our rooms, went up to breakfast, and just kind of hung out there until 9:30, and then just walked right off the ship. And there was no lines, no chaos, no crowds. It was super duper smooth.
Back to the ship just for a moment. How was the casino as far as like the cigarette smoke? Was it, you know, in and around the casino?
It wasn't bad at all. Like, you know, sometimes you have, of course you have to like almost walk through the casino to get anywhere. And I didn't notice it. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, like this is terrible. Mm-hmm. So no, it didn't. And maybe cause it didn't look very busy either. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of people in there. So, but no, not at all. No issues. And we work out every day too. So we'd go to the gym every day and there was never an issue with like, oh my gosh, this gym is so crowded or we couldn't get on a certain equipment. Like it was, you know, if somebody had asked me how many people are on the ship, I would have no idea because it never felt like there was too many people anywhere.
Any first time tips to offer someone who's maybe sailing MSC Lyrica or doing a cruise out of Athens?
I guess, you know, obviously keep an open mind because it is going to be a little bit different. It's a little different feel. You're a little more anonymous. Everybody's just kind of doing their thing. And it was a really good experience. I'm glad we did it. And to be honest, it was a lot of cost saving versus some of the other cruise lines. So just for that aspect of it, we were able to get the two rooms for the price of one room and even less than a price of one room on another cruise line. So definitely keep an open mind. It took us a few days to kind of figure out our flow and like where we like to eat and, you know, what we like to have for breakfast. And the place where you can get the burgers and whatnot, they do omelets and egg sandwiches and that kind of stuff. And once you kind of know that, you know, you kind of figure out what works for you and it worked great for our family.
Did you find any language barriers between you and the crew?
You know, no, you say at the, front desk, we did kind of have a little issue. The nice thing with MSC also is they match loyalty points from other cruise lines. So we've sailed on Disney quite a bit. So they matched our loyalty points from Disney onto MSC. So we were a little higher members for MSC from the get-go, which was nice. And we were supposed to have priority tendering in Santorini. And the first person I spoke to, you know, she wasn't quite understanding. I said, no. And she said, no, you don't get that. And we kind of went back and forth a little bit. And then she called somebody and she said, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you do. But it was taken care of. And I felt like everybody we encountered spoke English very well. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of the housekeeping staff, like if you needed to ask for something, they were a little confused. But other than that, we didn't have any issues.
Looking back, what was the biggest highlight of this cruise for y'all?
We really did enjoy Rhodes and we did enjoy, you know, just being on the ship. And it was, I felt like it was a very relaxed environment and, seeing Athens was great too. And all the port stops were great. The only thing I would have wished was a little bit more time everywhere. Like we left Santorini before the sunset and, you know, they're always famous for their sunsets. Mm-hmm. So it would have been nice to be able to, but I think there was a Norwegian ship in port at the same time. So I'm sure that's part of it,
right.
But I would have just liked, of course, everybody would want more time in a port, but
yeah.
That would have been the only downside.
And your final thoughts of MSC Lyrica?
Well, we did book another one. So for next summer, a different location. So I would definitely, anybody who's kind of on the fence, like I was, give it a shot. It's not going to be all the bells and whistles that you may expect on other cruise lines. But, you know, depending on the size of the ship and the newness of the ship too, that might change. Definitely, it's totally worth a shot. And traveling, going to a farther destination to start the cruise is kind of nice too, because you almost get two vacations in one. Mm-hmm. So you get a little bit of before and then a little bit after and then plus wherever you get to go on the cruise. So definitely, you know, don't hesitate to try it. And yeah, and it's, it was a great experience for us.
So airfare is super expensive right now. When y'all were booking your flights, do you have any tips or tricks to kind of look for like maybe a cheaper day to fly or anything like that for like you've noticed with your family of four?
Yeah, that it was expensive to fly into Athens. We live in Jacksonville. And so we ended up driving to Fort Lauderdale and it was much cheaper out of Fort Lauderdale than it was out of Orlando. Mm-hmm. And we use our airline points, our credit card points to pay. We used all of the points to pay for one of the tickets. So then we were able to kind of prorate it. And, you know, then it didn't feel quite as bad, but definitely look outside of your norm. we're booking airfare for coming up soon, and we're looking, you know, kind of look around and see, you know, don't have your heart set on one specific destination. Say, okay, I have to fly into this day, and have that flexibility to maybe fly into a different country, and then maybe there's a train you could take, or, you know, kind of have a little bit more flexibility, especially out of where you leave from.
Yeah.
You know, for us, Fort Lauderdale was like a 6-hour drive, but to fly from New York would be just as much out of the way. So
yeah, we've been talking with Jennifer about her 7-night cruise on MSC Lyrica. Jennifer, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this great trip with us.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
All right, Dougie, let's see what we got for you, buddy.
Cruise Radio is produced at the TripInsurance.com studios in Jacksonville, Florida. Get cruise news, ship reviews, and money-saving tips every Thursday on Cruise Radio. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show. If you want to help spread the word, give Cruise Radio a 5-star review. Find Cruise Radio where you listen to your favorite podcast, or online at cruiseradio.net. I'm your announcer.